that can be rough for people who are not prepared. Okay. Correct. If you're a pensioner, yes, and you rely on, you know, money from the government and you have no savings outside the system, I mean, you're likely to be a statistic.
If things don't go well here, you know, I've got alternatives, and I think we need to think that way.
There are a lot of crypto people who do not have a single frickin' ounce of gold. Okay. That's insane.
So unless you have Starlink, you're in trouble. If you have Starlink, you're fine.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a Starlink service, you're in deep trouble.
It's not difficult to shut Bitcoin down. All you have to do...
My property's worth so much, they're actually poor. They have no idea.
You have no right to self-defense in Canada.
So if you watch traditional media, they've got us focused on absolute nonsense.
When people get into a funk, the first thing I say is it starts in a gym because it builds a whole lot of healthy habits.
We've all been through a lot, and I think, you know, we need to be prepared.
And I think the best reason to prepare is so that you don't have to think about it.
And maybe we're paranoid, but we're going to survive.
Welcome to the Best Half Show. This is the show all about the big idea that the second half of your life could be 10 times better than your first, and still the number one standing podcast in the world. Here today with Roman Bodnarchuk, and very excited to talk about something very interesting, a little controversial, and that is Plan B. And what we're going to be talking about is that, you know, this current situation that we're in, where we're in the go-go times and whatnot, may not last forever. There's a lot of storm clouds that are out on the horizon, and we may be in a situation where there is a serious transition. The things that have happened really throughout the world at various times, where, you know, you have to be prepared for a situation where things can be a little bit chaotic. And so it's something that we've been thinking about for a while. It's something that we've been also been preparing for, even though we have a regular path, which is that everything is going to be great and things are going to continue to grow and develop. And we talk about our businesses and our families and our health and all of that. And that's still important. But my experience is that if you think defensively and you get that covered off so that if there is a real challenge, and what kind of challenge, we'll talk about kind of the challenges that we think may be coming, that you're able to survive that. And then you're able to get through to the other side of that. I mean, even in my own family, you know, all four of my grandparents are refugees. They all had to flee from their countries of origin. And I grew up with that lore. I grew up with the stories of what they had to do in order to survive, like basically leave everything behind and just go somewhere else with a suitcase and that's it. I know it's unthinkable probably for, you know, a lot of people that are in the audience, but those are some of the things we want to go and talk about today.
I think it's an incredible topic. Probably our most important topic, Mark.
Yeah.
My grandparents, the same thing, all refugees. They were escaping from Ukraine. My mom was born in a refugee camp in Salzburg, Austria. My dad, the same thing, escaping in Germany. So I grew up with grandparents that would, you know, share those stories with me. And I think that we're at a time like that again. This is a time in history that we have to really think beyond the headlines and think about, you know, prepare. A lot of people weren't prepared for COVID. They weren't ready for their business to be shut down for 2 years. They weren't ready for their lives to be put on hold and to be stuck in a home or not being allowed to go worship or go to a church or go to a gym for years. I mean, weren't prepared. We need to be prepared now. This is, you know, very serious time. So I think it's a very important topic today.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting about COVID. I mean, I'm somebody who's been pretty skeptical about government narratives and media and big business and whatnot. Even I was caught flat-footed. I never thought we wouldn't be able to get on a plane. I never thought that, you know, they'd be able to essentially shut down the entire economy. It's pretty unbelievable. But I think that's a good point, just to show how bananas things can actually get. Why do you think we need to think about defense, to think defensively, to think about preparedness? What's going on?
I think there's a couple of things going on. I think if you study any of Ray Dalio's work, I think he's studied in the last 500 years of history and the end of the fiat currencies. And we're at the end. And typically there's a war that happens. There's a debt cycle, huge amount of debt, which, just to put this in perspective, every 100 days the U.S. Prints $1 trillion. We're no different in Canada. Canada is, for example, Ontario, we have now more debt just in Ontario than any country in Europe and any Latin American country. So from a debt ratio, it's unbelievable. So when you print that much currency, your dollars become worthless. Mm-hmm. So in the last 4 years alone, if you had $100 in the bank, Today it's $75. Well, they're actually spending more money now than during COVID. So in 4 years, your money will be worth less. So imagine you had $100 in the bank 4 years ago. In another 4 years, it's worth less than 50. That means everything that you own just went down 50%. People don't understand that. We know there's a real estate, there's definitely a real estate decline happening. Average home values down about 20%, and it's just starting. But when you add the currency on top of that, Mark, this is devastating. Yeah. People are missing that. They're missing what's really going on.
Yeah, no, and so I've studied those Ray Dalio things, and even before that, I remember back in 1991, and I was at the Queen's Bookstore, and there was a book called The End of Empires by a guy named Paul Kennedy. And I was interested even back then. So even back then, I could see that, how long is this going to last, right? So what Ray Dalio specifically talked about was how empires work. So he talked about the transitions between empires. So when I talk about transition, that's what I mean. So for example, the transition between the Dutch Empire and the British Empire. Well, that was a massive thing. If you were in Holland at the time of that transition, and you didn't move to England like a lot of smart people did, then you were in trouble. Right. And so same thing, you know, the Spanish Empire rose and then it collapsed. It collapsed the same way that a lot of other ones, military overextension, huge amounts of debt, you know, and so on. So I think what Dalio said is there are telltale signs of the end of an empire. And you see that right now in the US. You see, as you said, a huge rise in debt. And before that, what he calls financialization, and where you stop producing things, like they don't produce a lot in the US. Instead, what they're doing is exporting capital. They're become investors. The same thing happened in Holland, where they went from producing lots of things to being investors in other people's economy. And then eventually, you know, you get to be in big trouble. A huge decline in morality of society. This may be controversial, but a big rise in homosexuality. This happens in every empire. The Greeks, the Romans, you know, the Spanish, they all had a rise in decadence. You know, and homosexuality is part of that. And so you see all these sort of telltale signs of an empire that in the US that's in serious decline. In the US, they can't even manage their own borders, right? There's over 10 million illegal or undocumented people.
On purpose.
Yeah, I mean, that's debatable. I think it's on purpose as well. That may be a controversial point.
Yeah.
That it's there to maybe swing an election or maybe even more nefarious than that. Yeah. But 10 million people, including some very unsavory people from the prisons of Venezuela and Haiti that are in the United States right now. I mean, I would be very nervous if I was in the US, even in some safe haven places like Texas or Florida, where Texas has over 500,000 of these guys right now. What if you're in a financial transition? What do I mean by that? Well, let's say Saudi Arabia stops taking the US dollars for oil. They've threatened that a lot. What if China stops taking US dollars for all the crap that they stick in our Walmarts? That's a huge problem. And they've threatened to do that. In fact, they've been studying it for over 20 years.
They've been working on it.
They've been working on it for 20 years. Yeah. Why are they working on it? Because it's a mathematical certainty. Yeah. There's an exponential curve and it does this. Yeah. And it's baked right into the architecture. It's baked right into the interest rate. You can't have interest rate go up like this forever. Eventually, you hit a ceiling. And basically, it's the producing nations of the world that decide when to blow the whistle. You've got the US like throwing their military weight around, whether it's in Ukraine or even in Taiwan, where they have their own special forces there. At some point, you know, these guys, meaning like, let's say the BRICS countries or China and Russia in particular, where they're just gonna say, we're just not gonna fund our enemy anymore because they are out of control. And they don't have to fire a shot. They don't have to shoot any missiles. All they have to say is, we're just not gonna accept US dollars anymore. And then all hell breaks loose. So there's one of the things that I've studied inflation a lot. I've been interested in precious metals and cryptocurrency for a long time. Inflation and hyperinflation are not as related as you think. I mean, yes, hyperinflation means lots and lots of inflation, but really what it is a complete abdication of trust in the currency, where people are just like, it is broken fundamentally, and the best thing I can do is just get rid of my dollars as fast as I can. And that's different. Like, we don't have that right now. People still have confidence in the US dollar. They know that prices are gonna go up, but they don't believe that things are fundamentally broken. At some point, that switch may go on. And at that point, if you're like in a place in the States where you've got half a million people from prisons that are kind of all around you, you may be feeling a little vulnerable and you need a plan B. You need an answer on what to do to make sure that you survive whatever that transition is.
So I just want to talk about why I believe this is real and why I've been working on plan B for a long time. When COVID happened, I complied for 14 days and did what they said, because they said it was going to be 2 weeks. But after that, I wanted to go to a home that I had in Miami. And I didn't want to fly. I knew I was going to be there for a while. I tried to drive across. I could have flown. I was legal to fly, but they made it illegal for me to drive. I was put, even though I didn't leave the country, I tried to leave the country, I was put under 15-day house arrest. Wow. I was treated like Pablo Escobar. For 15 days, they had the OPP, which is like the local police in Collingwood, surround my house, and they would just like circle around constantly for 20, like it was absolutely insane, because all I did is I tried to leave the country, which I could have done on a plane, but I didn't want to. Then it got worse. Then when the protesters started protesting, if you had donated money to the protesters or if you had protested this, they would freeze your bank accounts. This is Canada. This is not China.
No, this is not Russia.
I was there
at those protests, and I emptied my bank accounts because I thought they were going to go after it.
Right. So this actually happened. Yeah. So we still have people that didn't want to get vaccinated. They still can't get jobs. I mean, there's literally things. This is like 4 years later.
Yeah.
We've seen that groceries, the average grocery basket that was $100 now costs $150 in the last 2.5 years. So this is real. So I think people that think these are conspiracy theories need to really think about what we're going into, because we're about to go into some, you know, again, I know it's controversial, but this is, some would call World War III, when they've already said Ukraine will join NATO. That means that all of the NATO forces now have to go fight in Ukraine against Russia. This is what we'd call World War III. We're literally days or months from this happening. All of these things are happening. So if people aren't thinking about a plan B, I think they're delusional.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even want to think about a war again. I feel like if that happens, I mean, I'm not sure what sort of preparation you can do. I mean, again, other than going to South America or whatnot. I think one of the things you do have to think about is kind of ranking. Well, what kind of disorder do you see happening? The main one that I'm thinking about is basically crime, gangs, that sort of thing. So that basically you have economic disorder. And as a result, you have effectively you've got law enforcement and a criminal element working together. So that's what happened in the former Soviet Union. There's a guy named Dmitry Orlov who basically lived through that time at the collapse of the Soviet Union. And he put together a framework on basically the stages of disorder. But there's a stage that he called warlordism, which is what happened in the former Soviet Union, where basically law enforcement becomes completely corrupt because they're not being paid enough. So they need bribes in order just to put food on the table. And then they collaborate together with sort of local power mongers. And I'm not sure things will get that bad, you know, here, but, yeah.
Can I speak to that? Yeah. So Mark, this is real. Yeah. 2 years ago, my Land Rover stolen out of my driveway and I thought, wow, it's like a freak thing. So I called the police. Yeah. It's about 2 hours on hold when you call the police and you have to keep calling till you reach them. Then it takes, well, in my case, I guess I was lucky, it took 36 hours till they responded. Oh, and by the way, you can't leave your house. You have to wait because you don't know when they're going to come. So 36 hours later, they show up. They basically laugh when they come. Like, we're never going to recover your car. You know, there's one stolen every minute. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So reportedly, there's 12,000 cars that were stolen in Toronto. They're now saying that only one out of two is even reported, just because just to report it's so difficult, and they know they're not recovering them. So when we think about this crime problem, this is already happening.
So do you think that these, and apparently they're Chilean gangs, that's what I've heard. They're all from Chile, but they're here, and also in the States, they're very organized. Do you think they're paying the police off? Because
100%, Mark. Listen, maybe. If I park in this city and if I'm 5 minutes over my meter, within 5 minutes, a police officer will come give me a ticket in this. Like, so we can give somebody a ticket in 5 minutes anywhere in the city in 5 minutes. But it takes us 36 hours to respond to a car theft. And then I had a special GPS tracking in my car, a special one. So then I called the company and said, hey, I want to share this with the police. They said, oh, did you already report this to the police? I said, yes. And I said, I want to track it. And I said, oh, now that you've told us that you've reported this to police, we're now disabling your tracking. So now a service that I was paying $30 a month for, they were told by the police department to disable it so I couldn't track my car any longer. Think about this.
Wow.
Only the police could, which I knew the police couldn't care less.
This is mind-blowing.
No, this is so if you don't think there's corruption at this level, where the largest budget in the city of Toronto is over $1 billion with no oversight, no one actually knows where that $1 billion is going. We have the highest paid police force in the world. So if you don't think there's a tie to this, you know, I think you need to give your head a shake.
Wow, that is interesting. This is new information. But yeah, I guess it's unsurprising, right? Where again, you've got inflation that's probably going up much faster than compensation, and like they feel like they've got to do something. And we know police corruption is definitely a thing.
So did you see what the Toronto police said 2 weeks ago? Well, you know, we're concerned about people's safety. Yeah. So maybe you should just like leave your front door unlocked, because they just want your car anyway. Just like leave your front keys.
Just leave the keys
just
in there.
Just leave the keys there.
Why don't you bring up milk and cookies at the same time, like, and they, just make this, them this, really feel welcome?
This literally was what the police department said. And there's been no retractions from the chief of police on this. This is incredible.
No, that's one of the challenges being in Canada, right? So like in the States, at least you can defend yourself easily with a firearm. Like here, firearms are legal. You can, you know, I have my firearms license. You can be armed, but good luck using it. I mean, Trudeau came right out and he actually said the truth. He says, you have no right to self-defense in Canada.
That's right.
You have the right to sport shoot. You can go out and you know, shoot birds and whatnot, but you don't actually have that, you know, what he said is, it's not like you don't have a right to self-defense, but that's actually not the purpose of your gun, is to defend yourself. Like in the States, are very clear. You have a right to self-defense. You have a right to defend your property. At least most states. I mean, some really liberal states, maybe not. But here, you know, like the joke I've made is that, you know, if somebody comes onto my property and if I shoot them, you know, you may want to consider burying them. I shouldn't say that. But because if you report that, like there's just as good of a chance that you are the one that's going to be prosecuted.
Absolutely. You would be.
And I've seen it where even like the robbers sue. sue the homeowner because, you know, they've not been treated like the way they want.
That's the difference between Canada and the States. It's very different.
Yeah. Although, yeah, hopefully, I mean, in a state of disorder, who knows? Maybe, you know, again, maybe bribery works in your favor. You go tell the cops here's what happened. But anyway, what we should talk about what to do. I mean, we've now talked about kind of what the challenges are. There, we have a mathematical certainty that there will be a currency transition. In the next, I don't know, probably 5 years. If we've gone from a trillion in the US, from a trillion in a year to a trillion in 100 days in just a couple of years, you know, you can trace that up. Like in two, three years, that's gonna be a million in a week, or maybe a day, or maybe a minute, right?
Right.
So we know that's a mathematical certainty. I don't know about whatever war and all that kind of stuff. I don't know, but I do know that currency transition is happening. What do we do? So we talked a little bit about you know, other places, talk a little bit about a sort of a bolt hole or place in the, you know, in your country. I mean, Doug Casey, who's like a famous speculator and anarcho-capitalist, talks about the five flags, so that you want to plant flags in different places. So that it's the way he says it is that your biggest risk is political these days. It's actually not financial economic, it's political.
Right.
In other words, if you're in Canada, if you live in Canada, you are a Canadian citizen, you have your business registered in Canada, you have all your assets in Canada, and so on, then you are really at risk. If your country goes south, you're in big trouble. So the idea here is that you want, for example, some of your assets elsewhere. Which include even your digital assets, you know, that are elsewhere. If you've got precious metals, it's not all with you. You have your precious metals in different places around the world. You have bank accounts in different places around the world. You may have your business registered elsewhere, like my business is registered in Singapore. You have a community that is not, you have a local community, but you also have people around the world that if you need to get out, that you can go to places where you already know people who can be helpful to you.
Right.
And so I'm a fan of that. I don't have a second passport. I really should go and get one. But a lot of those other things I've already done.
Good. Yeah. So I've done the same thing. So COVID was my light switch. Like, I need to figure this out. So I now have corporations and bank accounts in Mexico, in Costa Rica, in Florida, and obviously friends and places to live in those places. So if things don't go well here, you know, I've got alternatives. And I think we need to think that way. And it doesn't mean you have to buy a property. You can literally have a corporation. You can open a bank account. You can rent a property. You don't have to buy something. But I think we all need a plan B. The reason I like Costa Rica specifically, they have no military. Why is that important? Well, there's no missiles, aiming at Costa Rica, no matter what happens. But I think a real threat to us, and we should all watch a Netflix movie. I know I mentioned it to you, Mark. I mentioned it to a lot of my friends and family. It's called Leave the World Behind. It's the only movie that Barack Obama was in charge of producing and helping with the screenplay. And what happens, and he is still running the government, in case anyone thinks Biden is running the government, it's Barack Obama's running the government, and he knows what's going to happen. And if you watch the movie, you're going to see what's going to happen next. So it's a very, very good a story that's going to explain what will happen next. And the reason that people do that is they do that to relieve their guilt. It's like, hey, look, I told you I made a top 10, Julia Roberts film on Netflix. If you didn't watch it, it's your fault. But they do that to relieve their guilt. So if you want to see what's going to happen to us, I'd highly recommend that movie. Yeah, that's
the whole foreshadowing idea. So the theory is that the people who are truly in charge of what's going on in the world, which are not Biden and Trudeau, is that there's sort of a super, shadowy, a super government that's sort of shadowy and behind the scenes, that part of their sort of karma is that they feel like they have to show people first. And they really did promote that movie very, very heavily.
They did.
I've seen it. Yeah. They've dropped all kinds of Easter eggs in it to ensure that conspiracy theorists would find all kinds of stuff. And you can make a case that the ship, that hit
Baltimore.
In Baltimore, that hit that support is kind of right out of the movie.
It's right out of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You see all these old Simpsons episodes that have sort of forecasted the future. I mean, who knows? It could be a coincidence, but there's certainly a lot of those coincidences.
But we need to prepare. And I think it starts, Mark, with our physical health. If we're not in the best shape of our lives, if we're not physically, mentally in the best shape of our lives, we're going to have a really hard time dealing with adversity. It's like COVID. People that were incredibly physically fit, mentally fit, they didn't worry about COVID. They weren't worried about their immune system. People that were out of shape, that were not physically strong, that had terrible diets, they were at huge risk.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's funny because I've been, I have been interested in preparedness for quite a while. Even back in, even Y2K, I remember that was a total non-issue, but even back then there were people that were writing about it, and it could have been. I think heroic efforts were made in Y2K to remediate things. But then 2008, we came within apparently minutes from the financial system shutting down. There was a senator in the US that said, you have no idea. We came within 35 minutes of all the ATMs shutting down in this country. The system has an amazing ability to kick the can down the road. And that might happen again. There may be another 3 or 4 years of kicking the can down the road, in which case, great. It won't happen forever. I've read lots of stuff on sort of preparedness and just general transitions, like places that go through these transitions and kind of what happens. One of the things that is often made fun of are people that collect 18 guns and think that's going to protect them, but yet they're, 50 pounds overweight.
Right.
I totally agree with the physical fitness. People should learn how to defend themselves. Both hand to hand and with weapons. Yeah. So I do Muay Thai. I've started learning jiu-jitsu. I work out a lot. I'm getting in great shape. I think the mental fitness is really, really important. Right. There is a war on for our mind. I really felt that during, many times during this whole COVID thing, I thought I was going nuts. Yeah. I think I'm one of those people that kind of figured some things out. Yeah. I can't talk too much here, but and it was hard. I lost a lot of friends. I had some family that was offside. It was a real war on for our mind. I think you're going to start seeing that again, where you have to be able to stay focused and don't get depressed.
Well, Mark, on this point, it's happening every day. So if you watch traditional media, they've got us focused on absolute nonsense. Yeah. They have us completely focused on these transgender issues, and they changed Easter to Transgender Day. And they're constantly filling us with absolute nonsense while the real things happen in the background, which you never hear about. So I find that my friends that are just obsessed with traditional state-run media, they're in oblivion. They have no idea what's really happening. And thank goodness we have the internet. Thank goodness we have platforms like the podcast where you can actually get, you know, objective ideas that are not from the traditional media.
Yeah, I think so. And be able to tune that out. I mean, that stuff used to kind of upset me. And now I'm just like, yeah, you know what? This is the direction things are going in. This is their way of, just another way of dividing society, right? So we've already had dividing blacks versus whites, which is still kind of happening. All the social justice stuff and the transgender, whatever. It's just there to get people angry.
Yes.
And you just got to be able to tune that out and focus on, I guess there's sort of two paths, right? So we talk about plan B. There's still plan A, which, you know, you still have to do. Again, there's an unbelievable ability to kick the can down the road. I'm amazed by it.
Yeah.
I think the central banks, especially the Fed, I mean, people deride the Fed all the time. I think they're geniuses. I think for keeping this charade alive, that's what it is. It's an illusion. I mean, so much of what we see in the world, and that's a big part of what our podcast is about, right? Yeah. Is that there are illusions that you have to basically be able to see through.
Yeah. So can I give you an example on that? Yeah. Here's an illusion. So the real estate market's fallen at least 20%, probably far more. But the reason it hasn't fallen even further is every bank was told by the government, just change the amortization. So we know that Bob can't pay more than $3,500 a month. So let's stretch his amortization to 50 years. Okay, well, he can't pay 75 years. They literally have people doing 90-year amortizations. This has never happened in the history of mortgages anywhere in the world. So what Bob's going to realize is, oh my gosh, I have no equity in my home. I'm paying twice as much as I could have been if I was renting. Right. I literally own nothing, but this illusion that, oh, he still owns his home and the bank's helping me. People are just delusional. Yeah, that's called kicking the can down the road.
It's a great example. Or the official inflation statistics, which are so funny, right? Like there's actually a great website called Shadow Stats that calculates inflation the way that they did
in 1990
and 1980.
Oh, yeah.
And like the real rate of inflation is 7-8% right now. It's not 3. Yes. And back 3 years ago when the official rate was at 8, the real rate was like 15.
Yeah.
And anybody that goes in like shops for food in the grocery store can see that for basically. But they tell you, they gaslight you and they say, no, the inflation is low. And then the media says the inflation is really low. And then there's some idiots who believe that, but you know, you have to see through that. And that, again, so I love things like Shadow Stats and whatever, where you can go and see through it. That's why I love X. I love Twitter, because that's one of the few places in the world where you can actually find out the truth.
Can I give you one more example of this? So here's a great example. So real estate. So people say, oh, you know, I bought my house 10 years ago for $1 million and now it's worth $2 million. And I think I've made $1 million. So they forgot about the $1 million of interest. They forgot about the property taxes they paid for 10 years. They forgot about the 1% of the property value they put into upgrades all those years. They really haven't made any money, and their currency's down 25% over 4 years. They don't actually realize they've actually lost money. Yeah. So again, this is all an illusion that the banks and the government provide people to think, oh, but I'm rich. I have my property's worth so much. They're actually poor. They have no idea. So this is all part of the narrative.
Yeah, no, that's part of it. So hopefully, you know, we can see through that. In terms of what to do. So we talked a little bit about, you know, five flags or internationalization, right? You can't have all your eggs in the basket of where you are, whether you're in Canada, United States, or really anywhere. And you have to keep monitoring things. So one of my plan B locations is Brazil, where I have a lot of friends there. Don't have a lot of infrastructure there, but, you know, and I just kind of like the place. But, you know, Brazil's kind of going crazy right now, as it does, you know, every sort of 20 years, 20, 30 years. They say Brazil's always turning the corner. And I think that's still true. But you have a potential kind of dictatorship by a Supreme Court judge there. It's kind of crazy. I don't know if people are following that on Twitter. Elon Musk is involved. He may be under a kind of arrest in Brazil pretty soon. So it's something you have to sort of keep your eyes on. And maybe that's part of the lesson here is optionality. And unfortunately, options cost money.
Yes.
I mean, literally, we know from options theory, you have to pay for options.
Yeah.
It's actually one of the things that makes things really hard. I remember during the whole COVID thing, because you don't know where the attack is going to come from. Again, if you know where the attack's going to come from, you can build a defense against it. But you know, if you're France, you build your Maginot Line, the Germans can go around it. So it's expensive to build a wall around your entire country. So I think it really requires a lot of thinking, which is how do I take my very limited resources of time and money and, you know, energy and community, and how do I get the most optionality out of it? But yeah, I think there's some easy internationalization that you can do. I also think it makes sense to think about what happens if your city becomes a dangerous place. Right. I know we're here in Toronto. It's still one of the safer places in North America. However, crime is up 2.5 times
yes.
from 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you know, that is something, again, if you're in a situation where like the supermarkets are closed for 3 or 4 days, which has happened around the world all the time.
Yes.
What's going to happen? When people, as I said, civilization is only 9 meals away from yeah. anarchy, right?
Or let's say they take out the internet, which is most likely. So the internet goes down.
That's really
so dangerous. What happens to yeah. people? Just think about that. If we take out the internet, there's only 7 servers running the internet. We take, everyone knows where they are. You take out the 7 servers. So unless you have Starlink, you're in trouble. If you have Starlink, you're fine.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a Starlink service, you're in deep trouble.
Interesting. Yeah. So I have that. So I have a farm that's about an hour and a bit away from here in Toronto. I do have Starlink there.
Good.
And yeah, I mean, I have, you know, I have some ability. I have a community there, which is actually pretty interesting.
It's huge.
And I think that's really important. If that, in fact, that's probably one of the most important things to do. And it doesn't actually cost a lot in terms of money or time, but you know some people
yeah.
in other places where you can go, where people who think similarly to you.
Yeah.
I think that's an easy thing. So, you know, in my farm community, the people who know me,
yeah.
People who I've helped before already,
yeah.
who I think may be able to help me, because in the end of the day, I'm still an urban guy who's made money on computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've learned a lot about, in my farm through YouTube, I've learned yeah. a lot about plumbing and electricity and other things like that. But yeah. at the end of the day, I'm still an urban guy.
I think we need to pick our team. So I recently picked a team of 15 people, a person in Ukraine, a person in a friend of mine in Turkey, one in Israel, Costa Rica, US and Canada. And I said, guys, let's get in the best shape of our lives. And I'm doing the 75-day yeah. challenge because I want my team to be ready.
Yeah.
No matter what happens in life, I want them to be in the best shape, because if we're going through some difficult times, I want a team that's around the world that we're ready to dispatch and help each other.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I mean, that's... So I'm a CEO coach in terms of my regular line of work. And that's the first, when people get into a funk, the first thing I say is it starts in a gym, because it builds a whole lot of healthy habits. You have to be, you got to wake up early. You have to have the discipline to go all the time. And then it has all these other knock-on effects. So yeah, I totally agree on the physical fitness. And it's great that you're building that community. I think it's key.
So one last point yeah. I want to make, yeah. And I know this is what I love, is that we differ on many things, but you're a big proponent in gold, and I totally believe that it's an incredible asset, and it's you know, a currency that, or it's something that will hold the test of time. So I yeah. agree people should have gold. I also believe that a digital currency is really important. Mm-hmm. My friend in Turkey, he did actually bring all his gold, which is yeah. really hard to do,
yeah.
across to Turkey. And he actually bought his property during COVID
wow.
with gold bullion. So it can wow. be done, but the that's story really he has hard. Is incredible.
Yeah, that's really hard.
How we did it. Yeah. But what I like about Bitcoin, I'm a huge proponent, is I can do that anywhere. Nobody calls me, asks me questions. I was in Mexico last week.
Yeah.
I was just trying to move like $5,000 from account to account, and the bank's calling me and asking me what I'm doing. I'm like, it's $5,000. Yeah. It's none of your business. At $10,000, they can ask me, but at five, they can't. So I think that's what I'm a big fan of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that's the only actual use case of Bitcoin. And it's not a bad one, right? It's basically used to circumvent governments and banks.
Right.
You know, you just gotta ask yourself, if you're in a time where you are in a transition, is that going to be allowed or not? But the answer is it might be. So part of my message really is around optionality. So you know, it's not only Bitcoin or only gold or other precious metals or other currencies. It's again, I have multiple bank accounts. I have multiple digital assets. I got multiple physical assets. They're in different places in the world, right? And so, yeah, like I think there are a lot of crypto people who do not have a single frickin' ounce of gold. Okay, that's insane.
Yeah.
And they almost have an allergy to anything physical. They're like, no, the world is all digital. It's like, no, it's not, okay? The world can easily stop being digital very quickly. It's not difficult to shut Bitcoin down. All you have to do is shut down the off-ramps, which is already happening. Okay, if you go to, I recommend going to the subreddit on Coinbase and look at the huge problems that are happening here. Coinbase is shutting down withdrawals all the time.
Right.
And you say, oh, well, it's fine. I won't have mine on exchange. I'll just have my crypto in my cold wallet or whatever. Yeah. Good luck getting it out, right? Good luck bartering with that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of, like, that farmer's not going to give you eggs for your Bitcoin, okay? But you know what? They will for a silver dollar.
Well, in Ecuador, they will. Some countries will.
Okay, we'll see. From what I've read, it's not. Like, even in El Salvador, which is, apparently super Bitcoin friendly, they don't. They don't want Bitcoin. They don't. Like, they want dollars. They want USD.
Right.
And, but you know what? If you, again, if you gave them a silver dollar or silver, whatever it is, like, you can get junk silver. So I'm a proponent of that, which are basically like old silver dimes and quarters and whatever. Like, a silver dime will buy you a dozen eggs. These are dimes from like 1965 or before.
Right.
Whatever, you know, will it come to that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But you know what? It's not, it doesn't cost a lot to have some reserve. At the same time, like, I think you need to have some Bitcoin. I don't have a lot. I used to have a lot. I don't have a lot. I'm not a big believer in it, but it is useful to, at least now in this current time, it's useful to get around some of these end runs around banking. And I've seen that before too, in various places in the world.
Mark, I think we need to be prepared. And, and our businesses, you know, do you remember 9/11, what we went through when we couldn't even travel and just going to a business meeting was just a nightmare.
Yeah, another illusion.
Right? Remember the dot-com meltdown? Yeah. Like, it was like, you know, we both had dot-com companies and it was like having SARS. Yeah. Like, it was awful. I remember the SARS crisis? And we've all been through a lot. And I think, you know, we need to be prepared. And was it Andy Grove from Intel said, only the paranoid survive?
Yeah.
And maybe we're paranoid, but we're going to survive.
Yeah, I don't think it's paranoia. Because again, a lot of this stuff has happened in the past. And look, we're normal guys running normal businesses. And you know, it's interesting. I've run into a lot of people who on the surface you think actually very successful in business. But when you talk to them, they are very nervous about what's happening in the future. And I think the best reason to prepare is so that you don't have to think about it very much.
You're ready.
You're ready. And you know what? If we're in another can-kicking scenario for another 10 years, which is, again, I think it's possible.
Sure.
That you're not there stuck being, you know, what's called black-pilled.
Yeah.
You know, and I know people who are black-pilled and they're
Explain
sad.
Explain what that means.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think they're sad. Those are sad people. And those are people who basically believe that we're effed, okay?
Right.
And that the government and all these people will always be oppressive and things are going to shit for sure. And they don't live. Right? They don't live. Their preparations aren't even that great anyway. They're really kind of small scale, but they're missing out on their life, on building their business, their health, their community, and other things that are important. And so you definitely don't want to be like that. So one of the things that I really like about being prepared is that I know what to do in different situations as best as I can. And then I can go on, you know, building living my business, life. Living my life and not having to worry because my downside is at least reasonably covered. I mean, do I have every downside scenario covered? No.
Right.
Okay. If there's war here, I mean, I'm going to be wasted just like everyone else and that's fine. But in other scenarios, like, and the ones that I think are most likely to occur, which is I think what's most likely to happen is a period of hyperinflation.
Yes, which we're already
happening
going
all over the world. No, we're not going through yet. Hyperinflation means at least 100% inflation
annualized
a year. So you're basically at least 10% a month.
Yeah,
we're not anywhere.
Not there yet.
Not anywhere there.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it's by the way, and that's not the end of the world. Like, you talk to people who've been through it, and it's like whatever they figure out a way.
Right.
It certainly makes life inconvenient when the cost of a cup of coffee is one price when you enter the cafe and considerably higher when you leave. That makes life difficult. But I think that's what's most likely to happen. And that could last for, you know, anywhere between a month to like 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's really, and when you have that, you also have a massive increase in crime.
Right.
The officials being corrupt and all kinds of stuff. And eventually you pass through that and eventually there's a new currency.
System.
There's a new system and things kind of get back to normal.
Yeah.
That's what I think is most likely to happen.
Right.
That can be rough for people who are not prepared. Okay.
Correct.
If you're a pensioner and you rely on, you know, money from the government and you have no savings outside the system, I mean, you're likely to be a statistic.
Right.
You know? You're not going to be on the news, but you're a statistic. You're not going to do well. Yeah. So I think that's a scenario that I'm most focused on, and I think I will do well in that scenario. And now I don't think about it.
I just want to give some parting advice. Yeah, yeah. I tell people that we're not trees. Yeah. And I think a lot of people in Toronto, specifically in my hometown, they think they're trees, that they can never move. Mm. And I believe that we need to go to places that treat us better, places that don't lock us down, that don't take away our human rights. Mm. And we need to look at alternatives, because if we don't, then we're just playing victim. Yeah. But we live in a world that we can live anywhere we want. And there's a place with lower cost of living, with healthier food, food that's not poisoning them. There's just better opportunities. I'm a big fan of looking at opportunities. I like places like Costa Rica.
So what's the baby step? Because you're right. I mean, you're going to say that, and a lot of people listening and watching are just going to be like, that's just out of reach. And, you know, Roman in his fancy suit, sure, he can talk about that. But well, maybe one way to start, and one thing I tell my clients a lot, is whenever you're feeling bad, get on a plane.
Right.
And it really is true. And maybe that's what, and I had a good friend of mine who was in my whole sort of circle during COVID, who basically said, Mark, you've got to get on a plane.
Yes.
Because the world, you will not believe how different things are out there.
Yes.
So I did. I went to Austin, Texas, and whatever. I'm like, wow, this is totally different from Toronto.
Yeah.
So maybe one easy thing to do is like get on a plane, go to whatever it is, whether it's Costa Rica or whether it's, there's a whole bunch of places that you know, that are uplifting, and see, hey, this is not so bad, and see, go look at the prices for renting.
Right.
A place, right? Yeah. It doesn't have to be a fancy place.
Go to the grocery store. See what
Yeah, exactly. One bed. What does a one bedroom cost, right?
Right.
Go talk to some of the local people.
That's right. Right.
And you realize, hey, this is actually doable. And you know what? It's not that expensive.
Yes.
You know, and maybe for whatever it is, it's maybe for, you know, $100,000 and you know, $1,500 a month.
Yes.
I've got, you know, a place to go.
Right.
And maybe it doesn't even cost that much. You can, maybe you rent it out with Airbnb. I did that with my place in Utah.
Yes.
And I almost cash flowed the place.
Yes.
Right. Yes. So now you've got something which potentially can be a place to go if the S hits the F.
Yes.
You know, maybe it doesn't cost you that much. It might even be a good investment. Actually, I should probably be doing that myself. I've done that before successfully, and I should really look at it again.
We'll do another show, but there's options. Yeah. But I agree. Get on a plane. Go to a different place and just go spend a month. Just go spend a month and see what you think.
Yeah, cool.
All right. This is a great show. Thank you so much,
Mark. Thank you.